Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Cutlerites are the only Mormon group that has a temple endowment ceremony. Steve Shields will tell us more about this group, and we'll also see if there are any ties to polygamy. Check out our conversation.
So that building is, in all intents and purposes, it's a temple, and it would resemble, similarly, the Kirtland Temple model, except Kirtland had no font.
Right.
But, you know, the upstairs room for the priesthood on the second floor, they weren't necessarily doing rituals there, but they did some washings and anointings upstairs on the third floor in the attic level.
Right.
And so on the second floor of the Cutlerite buildings in Minnesota and Independence, that's dedicated as a holy place for those. They call it the upper room work. They don't use the term endowment. They do know what that means because we've talked about it with them. But I do know, they've told me this, that women are ordained as high priestesses in the celestial church, not in the outer church, not in the public church. They have no priesthood in the public church.
Oh, so women have a temple priesthood, but not a an ecclesiastical priesthood.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the extent of my knowledge about that. A few years ago, when
interesting, Michael Quinn in my current interview just kind of said the LDS have the same thing. Jonathan Stapley was like, "Well, we don't want to call it priesthood," but
right.
But Quinn wasn't nearly as careful on that.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the Quinn camp on that issue. My mother and father did a mission at the Salt Lake Temple where they were ordinance workers.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, being a former bishop, is a high... They're both deceased, but talking about them in past tense seems weird. My dad's a high priest, and he was doing washings and anointings in the... the ordinance. Mm-hmm. Isn't that... No, what's the word?
Initiatory.
Initiatory. And mother was doing that on the women's side. So I contended that my mother was a high priest because it requires high priesthood to do that. The elders can't do it. High priests only can do initiatory work, right?
I don't think that's true.
I don't know.
I know they have a lot of brand new missionaries now are being called as temple workers. And I do know that they participate in
initiatory
work.
Well, and it's changed over the years, too, so I don't know. But anyway, I always contended that if that's done under the authority of the high priesthood, and mother said, no, we're just set apart. I said, well, but in that moment, you're doing a sacramental act in the theological term of sacrament. And she just, it wasn't happening for my mother. But I think Quinn is, and especially in the early days, mm-hmm. I think that was probably more specifically happening in that whole red brick store model mm-hmm. than it does now. I suspect there's probably pretty good idea that they were being ordained high priestesses. Church.
Quinn does say that that women, while they have the priesthood, are not ordained to priesthood office.
Right.
He makes that very clear,
and
which kind of Jonathan Stapley does as
there
well.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. That's yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. So yeah. There he would just say they have priesthood, but not
but
priesthood
not priesthood office.
Office.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's fine. Yeah.
So and that sounds similar to but what the.
It sounds very much like what the Cutler folks are doing. And their only source could be Red Brick Store Nauvoo. Alpheus Cutler was part of the anointed
quorum
as well as the Council of 50. And so that would be what he would know or would have known.
Did he leave? He didn't join with Brigham Young at all then?
They headed west. But Alpheus Cutler wanted to stick around and do some evangelization of the Lamanites, of the Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And so they stayed in southwestern Iowa, and him and his company of travelers, about 150 or so people, and established the community of Manti near Shenandoah, Iowa. And he's buried there. He died in 67, maybe.
1867.
Before they moved to Minnesota. And by that point in time, they'd broken with Brigham Young completely. 1853 was when Alpheus Cutler reorganized the church.
Okay.
So it wasn't...
As a reaction to polygamy?
Could have been. Could have been. The Cutler folks are very anti-polygamy, and actually they believe that any claims of Alpheus Cutler being a polygamist were fabricated by Brigham Young.
There were claims?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
I actually think the evidence that Cutler was a polygamist is stronger than just a claim.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But that quickly fades out. And so 1853 in September, he sees a sign in the heavens that he said Joseph had told him he would see when it became time to reorganize the church. Because Alpheus Cutler was a member of this special council of seven high priest apostles. That sound familiar? So the Mormon, the fundamentalist Mormons aren't wrong in coming up with that group.
Yeah, Council of Friends, I think is what
the
I
Council of
it.
Friends,
yes.
Yeah. But they are high priest apostles. They're not 70 apostles. There's two kinds of apostles. That's another paper entirely. So here's Alpheus Cutler claiming to be the last one of the seven. So they'd either died or they'd left the faith and gone with Brigham Young, and so he reorganized the church. And then he has revelations that sends them north. He doesn't make the trip because he dies as they're preparing to go, and they move up to what's now Clitheroe, Minnesota, where there was homestead land available. And they homesteaded several hundred acres up there. And in 1927 or 8, they sent a group of folks to Missouri, some of the younger generation. Farming was not paying off. Independence has always been the center place, and that was a logical place to send the young folks that couldn't make living farming and get secular jobs. So Stan Whiting, who passed away a few years ago, he was a steel worker and worked at Armco Steel, a huge steel manufacturing plant in Kansas City, and others of his generation found other work. And actually, it's his parents' generation, not his, because he was born in Independence. But his parents' generation, they found what we'd call technical jobs, I guess, or something of the time, industrial work. They live the law of consecration as fully as they're able. If the husband and wife are both church members, they typically have consecrated all their assets to the church. When that's a mixed marriage, it's a little more difficult to do it that way. They continue on in, you know, the consecration and endowments are two of their biggest hallmarks, I think.
Now, so, let me ask you one other question along those lines, because I've heard the claim that temple endowment is inextricably linked with polygamy, but it sounds like that's not the case with the Cutlerites.
Definitely not.
So how would you argue that? Is polygamy tied to the endowment, or can it be separated? I mean, I guess it's currently separated, but
it's currently separated, and it's probably a yes and yes answer. I think, for me, the overriding purpose and value of the endowment was to create what's the word I want to use? a contractual bond between people, not just men and women, but for the whole church. And it's, you know, it's kind of creating this, you know, we've sworn oaths to each other, kind of a friendship or fellowship or something. I don't know. Polygamy? Well, celestial marriage, certainly. Is celestial marriage necessarily polygamy and vice versa? I have my own views on marriage, and celestial does not come into the play there. I couldn't even live with one wife. I can't imagine what it would be like to have more than one. But then my wife, ex-wife, would say, I couldn't even live with you. So, I've not, you know, again, my book doesn't delve deeply into those details. Mm-hmm. It's all I can do just to try and keep track of things. And what I had always hoped would happen has been happening. And that is that others would say, hey, I want to pursue this one group. And so, you know, Brian Hales has done, it's a great handbook on the fundamentalist Mormon community. He's done his homework. Now, he's got a perspective, but I think the basic facts are really good. Gene Adams up in Washington State's done a monograph on the Temple Lot Church. Hmm. And then just recently, Daniel Stone produced a biography of William Pinkerton.
He's got upcoming interview.
And it's brilliant because he's an insider,
right,
who is not an apologist, even though he's very faithful, mm-hmm, member of the Church of Jesus Christ and believes in its precepts with all his heart. He's been able to step outside of the faith, so to speak, to provide us an objective history, a biography of William Bickerton and a little bit of history of the church along the way. And it's a brilliant book. We need more of that.
Yeah,
we need more of that. Well, there's been lots of studies on Strang. Vicki Cleverly Speak about, it's been 10 or 12 years ago now, did a marvelous biography of Strang that Signature Books did. That wasn't the first of Strang, but it's a really good historian's view. She's, mm-hmm, an outsider, but she spent a lot of time working with the insiders and doing her homework on that. And that was always my dream with Divergent Paths of the Restoration from the get-go, was that, you know, maybe I might have time to do a monograph on one particular area, but to have, you know, others become interested in those varied expressions of the church.
Well, and I did notice there were several entries where you would list the name of the church, and then you were like, this is what I know, and I don't know anything else.
Yeah, right. And there are quite a few that, yeah, it's like we, you know, somewhere in the evidential information, we've heard about this or we've found out about this. There's a few that have switched places as I've uncovered a little bit more information. There was one guy had some sort of a communal group, but we had him in Utah when he actually was in Kirtland.
Oh.
And, you know, and some along the years, I found out some more information about the guy. And, oh, my gosh, he was our LDS. He wasn't LDS.
Yeah,
and he was in Kirtland, not in Western Utah. And so
there was one group I ran into in Independence. I want to say it was the House of Aaron. Are you familiar with them very much?
The House of Aaron is based at Eskdale, Utah.
Yeah,
and they used to be called the Aaronic Order or the Order of Aaron. Morris Glendenning was the founder, promoter of that. And in the recent 10 or 12 years, they've been having lots of conversation with Fred Larson and the Remnant Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Mm-hmm. And John Conrad, who is the leader of the House of Aaron, his father was Bob Conrad, who was the chief high priest, successor to Morris Glendenning as chief high priest. John has gone out to Independence many times with folks from their church, and they've shifted a lot since Glenn Denning's times in the 40s. They always said they were not Mormons, and yet all of their members had been Mormons. And
because they're in Utah, right?
They used to use the Book of Mormon more than they do now. And Glenn Denning's revelations were numbered 137 and beyond, because the LDS DNC was part of Scripture, and it went up to 136 in those days. Now, they don't even use Glenn Denning's revelations anymore. That book has been out of print for years. Hmm. And they've moved into a messianic sort of a affiliation, where they believe themselves to be members of the tribe of Levi. And so they were Levites. And they always held the Jewish health laws, the Hebrew health laws. But they've moved more and more into this, what is it called, Messianic Christianity or Messianic Judaism or something? The term escapes me, but a lot of Christian groups are starting to say, well, let's bring these Jewish Hebrew things back in. And so they see themselves more in a line with that. They still would call themselves Christians, but they've got great musicians, and the folks are highly educated. University of Utah, they sent all their kids to the University of Utah to get degrees, all the way from Eskdale.
Oh, wow.
Out on the desert. They'd send these kids in and supported them. Mm-hmm. to get college education. They believe in education. They still do lots of farming out there. They've got, you know, herd of cattle and hay and all that kind of stuff out there, and they still do a lot of that.
They're kind of a consecration society.
It's a communitarian group. They've moved a little bit. John Conrad's wife has kind of been a promoter of, you know, let's quit wearing these little hats and uniforms when we're out in public. And so they've quit doing that. They used to have a communal kitchen where they would all eat together, and, you know, several of the folks would do all the cooking. I understand they don't do that quite as much anymore on an everyday basis, at Eskdale anyway. And their branch in Salt Lake never did, because they were doing, you know, secular jobs and living around the valley. They've spent a lot of time out there with, especially with the Remnant Church, some with some of the restorationist groups.
Yeah, I know they had, it seemed like they had a deal, like a feeding the homeless or something,
right,
in Independence,
yeah,
with the Remnant Church.
Right, yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, they've taken part in that. I don't know how many official members they might have in the Independence area.
Guy that I spoke to out there, he said that it seemed like more of them were in Utah.
Yeah, they're mostly in Utah. They had two farming communities out, Eskdale and Partoon, near each other.
Okay.
There might have been a third one at one time, I think. I'm not sure how active the Partoon is anymore either, but they used to publish a newsletter called Aaron Star. They did a lot of evangelism promotion on the Wasatch Front, but they haven't done that now for 25 or 30 years.
Okay.
So,
interesting.
But good group of people. They're good, honest folks. And I was good friends with Bob Conrad. He's been gone for a few years, I think, but just sincere, devout people.
Any sense on how big they are?
A few hundred, maybe.
A few hundred is all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not sure.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Steve Shields. In our next conversation, we'll talk about some Mormon groups that aren't really a new denomination.
Well, Affirmation is a parachurch organization.
A parachurch.
Yeah. It provides a church-oriented fellowship for LGBTQ people who are not often welcome in the standard ward. And most of them are LDS folks in Affirmation. But they're providing a ministry that is dare I say it, tangential to the LDS Church.
If you'd like a transcript of this conversation, we'll have it out shortly. I'd also like to thank you for those of you who are subscribing on Patreon.com. Please tell your friends. It's really helpful and will help support future documentaries and podcasts such as this. Also, make sure that you subscribe on our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can get our Twitter updates at Gospel Tangents. Also, make sure that you, if you'd like a written copy, go to our Amazon page. You can search for that. I've got a link here, but just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you should be able to find it there. You can also purchase a transcript of this at gospeltangents.com/shop. All of those proceeds will go to me and not to Amazon, so I really encourage you to do that. Make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. I've got a link here, but you can just do a search for Gospel Tangents there. If you'd like to get a transcript, click here. To subscribe here on YouTube, go ahead and click here. And over here, you'll see some of our other videos. Thanks for listening, and we appreciate you listening to Gospel Tangents.